Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air. 3w.realworldradio.fm.
The voices of the people affected by climate change at the UN talks. Rose Elu came to the UN COP21 on climate change in Paris, France, from the top western islands of the Torres Strait Islands, which are part of Australia. Together with a delegation of Friends of the Earth International in Paris, she warns about what the population of these islands is experiencing, affected by the rise in sea level. According to the Australian government, the Torres Strait Islands are distributed across an area of some 48,000 square kilometers. The distance across the strait from Cape York, Australia, to New Guinea is approximately 150 kilometers at the northernmost point. The islands lie scattered in between, some 200 to 300 kilometers from farthest east to farthest west. There are 17 inhabited islands and two communities located at the tip of Cape York that are classified as part of the Torres Strait. In the interview with Real World Radio, she told us how climate change is impacting the top western islands of the Torres Strait Islands, how local inhabitants are suffering from the impacts, the actions taken by the Australian government, and the goals with her presence at the COP21, among other issues.
Real World Radio is sharing a table here in Paris during the talks of the United Nations on climate change with Rose Elu. She comes from the top western islands of Torres Strait Islands, which is part of Australia. And you are here, Rose, as part of the Friends of the Earth International delegation. So first of all, I would like to welcome you to Real World Radio. And I would like to ask you why you are here, really.
Okay, I'm here, first of all, this is the first time to COP21 and to representing the Friends of the Earth, Australia, because I do most of the work out of Australia, out of Brisbane, to the Torres Strait on this climate change issues around the Torres Strait. So I am here. I am here to do the networking and getting to know the context of the other islands that are, or the nations throughout the world that are much affected by the global warming issue.
Okay, and Rose, could you tell us what's really happening on the Torres Strait Island where you live? How many people live there? And what are the things that you are experiencing there because of climate change?
Yes, well, this has been an ongoing issue for a very, very long time, that our leaders of the Torres Strait have been negotiating with the Australian government, because some of the islands in the Torres Strait, which are six of them, are very low-lying islands, and one of them is my island, where I come from. It only sits above the 6 to 10 meters above the water, the sea level. Now, when it's a monsoonal season, which starts every December to April, we have a torrential rains and the gale force winds throughout the Torres Strait. So that becomes problematic in a way of people getting to places because of the high rising sea levels. When the high rising sea levels affect the islands, you cannot leave the islands because the airstrips are flooded. You cannot travel by the sea because the seas are rough. And Torres Strait is one of the torrential parts of the world. It's got a very, very strong tides and currents. So in means of transporting to one island to another, you can only go by air. But when the airstrips is flooded, like on my island, and the other low-lying islands, there could be a heavy rain, and it caused a lot of floods, and the airplanes cannot land. So that becomes a problem in a way of people to get from the islands to the administrative island to do their things, or even to get the supplies of things. So it becomes problematic. And I think it's affecting also that our sea life, our marine life. When that happens, because we live from the sea every day, we fish, and we hunt, but we cannot plant anything anymore because of the erosion that has been a problem for many, many years. And now, especially the Central Islands, they cannot really make gardens because the land is all eroded. The only way they can do is to get a supply from the stores where it comes from the mainland of Australia. So we have a freighters, the ships go through from the islands to deliver the goods. But if that is not happening during the monsoon season, then there's a problem for our people to be able to travel. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good what you say in the sense that in which ways it affects people's lives. Mm. So I was going to ask you, what do people do for a living in your island? And you are saying that you fish, you hunt, so these kind of activities are really affected by those rains. In which other ways you think that the people is being affected by this behavior? And if you think that this behavior of the climate is being different from the past, what do you think about that?
Well, of course it is a very change of lifestyles also. When these occurrences occurred on the islands, people work for the living on the islands. The government provide work for the people. And then most of our people have moved away from the islands for better living on the mainland or better jobs, because it's very limited, the jobs in the Torres Strait, where one can only get a job when you are being qualified. But the leaders have been providing what we call it the Commonwealth Development Employment Strategies for people to work under and get paid. There are opportunities there for people to live comfortably as they can. But the effect of this climate change has changed a lot of lives. People are now living in a way that when there's a big rain or there's a big storm coming, they don't know whether they're going to survive or not. So there's that fear of whether the high sea, the sea rises and it goes over the island. And so there's issues about social justice issues, the employment issues, the educational issues, and other means of the things that the people can live comfortably, and which they cannot when these things are occurred, when that climate change is on the island itself.
And have you seen, Rose, a change in the behavior of the climate in the island?
Oh yes, I've seen that a lot. I've seen that a lot in a way of.
It was different in the past.
It was different in the past because people live harmoniously. They hunt, they plant their own gardens, and because we are seafaring people, our lives are attached to these islands, and there is that mentality of people. They believe that God has given us these islands for us to live in. So therefore, people sometimes they have trust to say, okay, our seas are, our land is eroding, but God must know the plans for us. So people still live there, even though they have a fear, but they feel confident enough that they will live for many, many, many years. And when if this is God's will, then, it will be. But the Torres Strait Islands, because these are the islands where we come from, and these are the islands that we were once part of the Pacific, and then we were taken over by the Queensland government to Australia in 1879. Okay. So when we become part of Australia.
Okay, and Rose, what does the Australian government do related to this issue in your island? Do you have any kind of support? Is it very difficult?
There is a support there, but it's not enough. It's not enough because the decision making is happening in Canberra, one of the political nations in Australia. That's where the decisions are made, and most of our the ministers, the government colleagues, they don't get up to Torres Strait enough to be able to really assess the problem itself on the islands. because it's so costly to get up there, for one. But then when you have a people living in there that Australia get the votes from every time when the people go to the polling booth to vote the government, Torres Strait Islands are part of that. And yet, what I see is that the support is not sufficient enough to really rebuild, or the strategies put together. We do have the Torres Strait Regional Authority, which is the head of the Torres Strait, headed by my brother now, and he's doing a great job in negotiating with the Australian government to be able to get the support in a way of rebuilding or protecting our islands, so that people can live in a way comfortable. But it's a long journey. It's a long journey because we can put the strategy, the policy, the implementations together, but it's up to the government how they fund it, how they see that it's possible.
Yeah, Rose, and what is your objective here in the COP21?
Well, my objective here is mainly to network and get to know the friends of the Earth International or the other organizations that I come about. These last 3 days I have been walking around the COP 21 and chatting to people, many, many nations, and it's overwhelming to see that these problems are not only in the Torres Strait, it's all over the world. And we, as a people of the world, need to join in hands. And I was really quite impressed the first day that there was a human hand protest we have here. I was part of that.
The human chain.
Human chain. But I was part of that, and that was very uplifting for me. All the people from all over the world, the strangers, and came in accordance, in unity, to be able to say, here we are experiencing these problems all over the world in a different ways. There could be drought, the drought, carbon dioxide, and as a fuel fossils and energy, refueling, whatever, that affects the creation. And then last night, just listening to the negotiation sessions from a couple of countries, what they were presenting to the floor about their, their nation's emissions of how they see the problem is. And so it was quite overwhelming for me. So what I like to see is to take back to my country what other countries are doing and what they, how they negotiate with their government. Because listening to one of the sessions the other day was about so many leaders of the countries giving so much millions and millions of dollars from the world contributing. And I'm just reading this morning about our Prime Minister, Prime Minister Turnbull, if I can just quote this, that he pledged Australia's commitment to its target of cutting emissions by 2026 to 28% of 2005 levels. By 2030, and committed to $1 billion funding for vulnerable nations, so to mitigate the effects of the global warming, to be drawn from the existing aid budget. So this was the thing that our Prime Minister was contributing in a way of, and beyond that, I don't know how to.
Yeah, the thing, Rose, taking into account what you were saying, is not only the need of money for mitigation, which is something that the industrialized countries always focus on, the issue of mitigation, but several countries all around the world, especially developing countries, but even in countries such as Australia, at least in those islands where you live, for example, the Torres Strait Island, you really need the adaptation issue.
Yes, you really need adaptation. That's a word that I could have mentioned it earlier. That's the main focus of adaptation issues, the strategies about adaptation of this country, nations in Australia, you know, like within Australia, the Torres Strait Islands, yeah.
Yeah, developing countries are supporting the need of getting funds, receiving funds and technologies, and also for adaptation, and supported by social movements and organizations as Friends of the Earth International, for example. So you really are here denouncing this need of adaptation, not only funds, but missions.
Missions, yeah, that's right, yeah, missions and everything. That's very true. Very overwhelming experience for me, in a way, and it's a learning point too, because this is the first time ever that we normally just within our own islands, our own nations, we do a bit of negotiations, but we're leaving it for our leaders of our country to do that, which they're doing a great job in putting forward ahead of the government, making decisions to cater for our people in the Torres Strait.
Okay. Anything else that you would like to add before we end the interview, Rose?
Well, I'd just like to thank very much for all of you lovely people that I have met here from the Friends of the Earth International. And I would like very much to be the part of this onwards, if I can be of any networking friends in global, and to get to know more about the countries that all you lovely people are from, and your issues that are affecting this climate change. And I'd just like to thank everyone, each and every one of you, to welcome me to this part of the world, Paris, and where this all happening. So thank you very much.
Okay, it was Rose Elu. She comes from, as I said in the beginning, she comes from the top Western Islands of Torres Strait Islands, which are part of Australia, as Rose explained to us. Thank you very much, Rose.
Thank you.